Welcome to the Resources for Integrated Care webinar series on member engagement. This podcast is excerpted from a webinar presented live in the summer of 2015 called Hard to Reach Populations, Innovative Strategies to Engage Isolated Individuals with Behavioral Health Needs. This webinar series is presented by the Lewin Group in collaboration with Community Catalyst and is supported through the Medicare-Medicaid Coordination Office in the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. MMCO is dedicated to ensuring beneficiaries enrolled in Medicare and Medicaid have access to seamless, high-quality health care that includes the full range of covered services in both programs. To support providers in their efforts to deliver more integrated, coordinated care to Medicare-Medicaid enrollees, MMCO is developing technical assistance and actionable tools based on successful innovations and care models. To learn more about current efforts, please visit resourcesforintegratedcare.com.
At this time, I'd like to introduce our moderator. William Dean is the Delivery System and Consumer Engagement Manager at Community Catalyst. William?
Thanks, Amy. Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us today. As Amy said, I'm with Community Catalyst, which is a national nonprofit consumer health advocacy organization, working in over 40 states to bring the consumer voice to any discussion that impacts their health care, whether that be at the federal or state policy level, at the delivery system or health plan level, or the individual patient provider level. I want to thank the Lewin Group and the Medicare-Medicaid Coordination Office for working with us to put out this series, and I invite attendees to check out our consumer engagement tools at communitycatalyst.org. I'm joined today by Julie Bloom, the Clinical Operations Manager for Hennepin Health, an award-winning Safety Net Accountable Care Partnership serving the Medicaid expansion population in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Laurie Lockhart, the Health Resilience Program Manager at Care Oregon, the recipient of a Center for Medicare-Medicaid Innovation Grant and Delivery System to Medicare, Medicaid, and Dually Eligible Beneficiaries across 11 counties in Oregon. Next slide, please. So right now I'm just going to outline an agenda for today's discussion. After I give a brief overview of other resources that are available that will help you strategize on finding and engaging your members, Julie will present on Hennepin Health and take a deep dive into their care coordination model and other innovative strategies that they're using. Then Lori will present on Care Oregon's approach, their health resilience program, and how they've succeeded to find and engage members and develop trusting relationships with them. After Lori's presentation, we'll do a couple of interactive polls to learn a little bit more about you before we dive into a question and answer period. Next slide, please. So before we get started, I wanted to make sure that you all know about some really helpful resources on today's topic that are out there, since we know that this can be a really challenging issue for many of you. So first, Resources for Integrated Care has a terrific brief available on their website entitled Locating and Engaging Members, Key Considerations for Medicare-Medicaid Plans. So if you haven't already done so, please take a look at that. Next slide, please. And then the Center for Healthcare Strategies, with the help of the Commonwealth Fund, has brought together seven particularly innovative health plans you see on your screen. Together, these plans make up the PRIDE Consortium, and they've developed two webinars and related briefs, so please take a look at these at chcs.org. Now I'd like to turn it over to Julie from Hennepin Health. Julie?
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me. So I'm here to talk about Hennepin Health, which is a healthcare demonstration project taking place within our county of Hennepin County, which is the largest county in Minnesota and encompasses Minneapolis. Next slide, please. So Hennepin Health is a partnership between four county-owned organizations, our county-owned medical center, which is a safety net hospital, county-owned FQHC clinic located in an underserved area of Minneapolis called North Point, our human services public health department from Hennepin County, which includes public health clinics as well as case management and eligibility, and then a county-owned managed health plan called the MHP. We operate as a Medicaid expansion MCO option, and we operate upon prospective enrollment via managed care choice, and we're also the default option in Hennepin County for individuals in Medicaid expansion. We have a capitated reimbursement from our state Medicaid agency. So we're really looking at having, or defined by having a very defined and small provider network that is united by a shared electronic health record. So we have been able to get our human services population or employees on the shared health record with the hospital and the clinic, which has been really important, as well as the managed care organization. Our risk-sharing funding model allows us to align our resources towards avoidable utilization. Essentially, we realized at one point that our human services and hospital were really unable to work in alignment towards the same goals of reducing avoidable utilization since so much of the hospital is dependent upon those resources. We've really based the model on integrating medical and social services and really focusing on addressing social determinants of health. And we're operating on a consensus-based governance structure between all four partners. Next slide, please. So we're looking at a current enrollment around 11,000 members, and we're serving the Medicaid expansion county population in Hennepin County, so 21 to 64-year-old adults without dependent children who are non-disabled at or below the federal poverty level. Our population characteristics are mainly male and racial and ethnic minorities, and we see a lot of common overlapping issues such as mental health conditions, chemical dependency, lots of homelessness and unstable housing, chronic physical conditions, and a general lack of social support, and resulting in a lot of use of the emergency department to access care. Our premise at Hennepin Health is really that we need to be able to meet these individuals' basic needs before we can meaningfully impact health, and this has really helped us to focus on this population in a way that we haven't necessarily been able to focus on before. Next slide, please. So Hennepin Health is really based on a care model with care coordination. So essentially, we've chosen to do an embedded in the clinic model. So our care coordination teams are in the primary care medical homes. And we really have chosen to rely upon a strong community health worker role, both inside and outside of the clinic. Hennepin County Medical Center has also pioneered what we refer to as an ambulatory ICU. So it's a completely team-based care clinic for our highest utilizing members and highest utilizing residents of Hennepin County in general, so not just those that are in Hennepin Health. We've really been working on supplementing the clinic care coordination teams with targeted behavioral health and social service interventions. We also supplement the teams with clinical coordinators who are RNs and social workers, and we've really found that to be a really nice complement of skill sets to work together as a team to meet our members' many needs. Again, all of these providers are documenting in a shared electronic health record. So essentially when Hennepin Health was formed, we thought if we build this really great clinical care coordination model within the clinics, our members will come and be excited to be in these clinics and stay. But we quickly found that wasn't the case, that a lot of the members, particularly due to unstable housing and the fact that we're the default enrollment plan, are unstably housed and live very transient lifestyles. And so we're really getting poor demographic information and having a really hard time connecting those individuals to care. Additionally, we found the need to start to prioritize and help our staff in the clinics prioritize their interventions, because very quickly we realized that by putting really great care coordination teams within the clinics that they were highly valued by the physicians and they quickly became quite overwhelmed. Next slide, please. So to respond to some of this being overwhelmed in the clinic and need to prioritize our care coordination, we developed what we call a prospective or predictive risk tiering model using CMS's hierarchical condition categories or HCC risk scores. Essentially, we were able to use these HCC risk scores to create tiering based upon risk for future healthcare costs. We decided to break it into four different tiers. We have an extreme, a high, a rising risk, and a general priority category. And essentially, we have chosen to target and prioritize the two highest tiers with the care coordination staff that are located in the clinics. One criticism of this model that we are continuing to work on or hone is because our model is really based on this idea of social determinants of health being such an integral part of what we're doing. We are continuing to work on the development of an unstable housing indicator that will be incorporated into this hierarchical risk score and tiering so we can really ensure that we're prioritizing people with unstable housing as well. Next slide, please. So to my earlier comment that we thought if we build it, will they come, we found out quickly that that wasn't necessarily the case. And so we had to put our innovation hats on and take on some community health workers that we could put into outreach locations. So we decided to have the community health workers employed by the providers. So we're really looking at a model in which the community health workers aren't representing the health plan, but instead are really representing the healthcare delivery sites in which they are employed. And we found this to be really important because they were really representing those clinics to the members, and thereby representing Hennepin Health, but at the same time kind of running out, I guess, a warm red carpet to those members that we're finding in other outreach locations back into those facilities rather than seeing it as health plan facing. So essentially we knew that we would have to build some relationships with community organizations and providers in which we felt that or knew or suspected that many of our members where they were. And so we're looking the locations that we were able to work out a relationship with and locate community health workers are listed here. So we have an adult correctional facility through Hennepin County where we found a lot of our members were spending time, and when they were in the correctional facility, they were no longer enrolled in the health plan, and so we really lost sight of them. So the care coordination teams in the clinics were saying, you know, I've got this case, I'm working really hard on it, and all of a sudden they just disappear and I'm not sure where they are. Fortunately, the correctional setting is also on the Epic health record, and so we've been able to do some work to bridge that. But the community health worker is working, spending some of her time in the correctional facility, as well as these other locations. So a local homeless shelter, our emergency department at our hospital, where we're really focusing on diverting dental needs, and then also in our health plan lobby, which has an interesting phenomena of having a lot of members come and hang out in the lobby. And so we thought that might be a really great place to start. As far as how did we go about building the relationship, particularly with the shelter and the correctional facility, we really had to look at it as, you know, what's in it for them. And what we found is that a lot of these organizations are really looking to increase their capacity for health and wellness education, and that this is something that community health workers were able to provide, and it was a nice vehicle for them to interact with the members of the people who were, once they were discharged from the correctional facility, would probably be coming back on the Hennepin Health plan. Additionally, we found that there's a lot of motivation from these community partners to be able to attend to the whole person, and a lot of times they are, you know, focused on their small part of the individual, but we're realizing more and more that that we need to treat the whole person, and sometimes that means for them treating diabetes or heart disease when that's really not what they're experts in. And so we found that by sending someone who represents a clinic that there was a lot of motivation in partnering with us. Next slide, please. So the next program I'm going to talk about is what we call our ED in Reach program. So essentially this is a program that we started to address what we knew was high utilization that was avoidable and preventable of the emergency department. And we knew that if we were going to try to accrue quick cost savings to support our model, that we were going to have to address overutilization of the ED. And so essentially we embedded one social worker in the emergency department, and then our hospital also has what's called, we call it APS, it's the acute psychiatric ED. And that social worker is really the person that's kind of stepping outside of the chaos of the emergency department and the psychiatric ED and really seeking to find individuals who are enrolled in Hennepin Health and looking at why, kind of from a systems perspective of why are people, you know, showing up there for preventable things to help us really identify and target some of these problems and patterns. So we also have that social worker in the ED connect with a case manager that we have contracted through a local nonprofit. And that case manager is, we call him the ED InReach case manager. And the goal is really to identify and target individuals in those settings where we think that case management services will help someone get back into a medical or behavioral health home. And so their goal is really reducing that utilization and finding preventative services to meet their needs. We had a lot of lessons learned from this pilot project. Initially, we thought, you know, there's all of these people in the ED, so if we just put a worker there to meet with them who is engaging, that they would, you know, not pass up the chance to work with her and get their needs met. But essentially, that wasn't the case, and it took us some time to really find the right worker, and we went through a couple of workers before we really found the right person to get this off the ground. So lessons learned is that we don't always, that connecting with someone in the ED is not always the best opportunity. A lot of times we're looking at people who have altered mental status, are really just not in a place when they're admitted to the ED or when they're even waiting in the ED to talk to someone to engage with them. So one thing that we found is that by giving them cell phones while they were in the ED, that was one strategy that often took off pretty quickly. We weren't sure, but we programmed cell phones with the ED InReach case manager, and then also our psychiatric and mental health crisis line, and a hospital contact, and asked them to follow up with the worker, and that's actually been quite successful. Additionally, we have had this ED InReach case manager working outside of the ED with in Minneapolis. We've got a great nonprofit organization called St. Stephen's that does street outreach, and so they've really been able to connect this case manager to a lot of the people that we're targeting simply by going where they're at. And sometimes that's homeless camps or places where the homeless are. Other lessons learned is that it takes a very specific staff person in order to kind of infiltrate the emergency room culture and the hospital and really connect with the individuals we're trying to serve. What we found is that we really needed someone who could fit into the hospital culture. So someone had, you know, some experience or understanding of a healthcare environment. One of my favorite stories is that when we first brought this pilot on board, the worker was not as familiar with healthcare settings, and we couldn't figure out why the emergency room wasn't connecting with her and wasn't giving her referrals. And I kind of found out on word on the street kind of way that when her first day she came to work, she was wearing open-toed shoes, and this kind of made her a pariah in the ED with the staff. And it was one of those just simple things that really put up some major barriers. So that was a really interesting lesson. So essentially someone who has some of that cultural knowledge of working in an ED environment. We also found that you need to have someone who's quite assertive, and so not afraid to talk to people, get to know them, who can engage with clients very well, but also being able to engage and build relationships with the staff in the hospital. It was really important that they became integrated. And so some of the other things is having to be just very reliable. We found that when they can document in the medical record the same way and with the same standards of documentation that the hospital is using, is that really made their work quite apparent. And so when someone had made a referral to this program, you know, when they would see that documentation of work being completed in the record, that really built their confidence that this work was happening and that it was worthwhile and it was helping their patients. And so that was a really important lesson learned. And then with all of that, so being able to fit in with the culture, getting to know and build relationships, we found that it's really effective to have this worker attending the in-hospital huddles, some of the clinics. So as we're asking them to bring people into the medical home or preventative care setting, that this worker is someone who is working with those with those staff, and so attending their meetings and their case consultations has been really important. All right, next slide. So thank you so much for having me today. I'll be here for question and answer at the end, and now I will turn it over to Lori.
Thanks very much. That was really interesting to hear, and I certainly connect with some of your lessons learned. There are some similarities, definitely, in the work we're doing and what we're finding out. Next slide. Let me, since Bill already introduced a little bit about my background, let me just get started with the program that I'm managing. Care Oregon's Health Resilience Program has been in existence about 4 years now. We started out at Care Oregon, and in the first year, we after the first year that Care Oregon had said we want to do this, we want to help our members and the providers out in the community, we applied for and were awarded, as Bill said, a CMI grant, which has supported our growth and learning and development over the past 3 years. So we just came off that June 30th of this year. Care Oregon is the largest Medicaid-serving plan in Oregon, and you can see the numbers here, with a small amount of Medicare and dual members. The Health Resilience Program is a trauma-informed program, and I highlight that, and we'll talk more about that and why that is the focus of our work and our intervention. We have 30 direct service staff embedded in 23 clinics and one specialty clinic. We also started out with trying to embed someone in an emergency room, but didn't have the success that Julia's had. So we quickly moved to how can we support our members getting access to and building relationships with their primary care providers. We also have the struggle of working across five healthcare systems, which is five different, at least, EHRs, five different methods of approaches. We serve the most high-risk, complex patients in our program who have avoidable utilization. And the criteria is at the bottom of one or more non-OB hospital admissions with or without ED visits within 12 months or six or more ED visits with or without a hospitalization within 12 months. Let me back up just a minute to further clarify. I'm sure many of you already know about trauma-informed care. But when I say that, it means that we're operating with the four values or fundamentals of trauma-informed care: transparency, offering choices, empowerment, and working in collaboration. And we do that both with our clients and our providers. So that is one of the main driver of our approach to working with the systems. We know that drivers of utilization for this population are usually multiple psychosocial issues and a huge amount of trauma history in the background of the people we work with. As the research demonstrated, with people who have trauma histories, they have a difficult time trusting others, especially authority figures. And we see that played out, as I'm sure you do, over and over again in trying to build a relationship with someone in a few minutes in a primary care setting. Our initial focus has been on establishing a trusting relationship with someone as quickly as possible. And we tend to work with people about 6 to 9 months. The 30 staff typically have a caseload around 20 to 25 clients. As I said earlier, we are embedded in primary care and in collaboration with them. So we have our health resilience specialist become a member of that team. We do most of our work outside the four walls of the clinic and walk with the patient in their world, really letting them know that we understand the struggles that they have. We can then bring that information back to the clinic, and it has really helped providers get a much deeper understanding of why their treatment plans aren't working and where the gaps are, because most of these members do not feel comfortable talking about deficits or deficit skills that they don't have. They don't understand English. They don't understand the treatment plan. They don't understand their medications. We work with adults, and we based our utilization criteria on Care Oregon's members. Every community has a different profile, and so we're specifically looking at our members. And what we found was that most of these members with high utilization that are not getting the care they need have at least two or more chronic medical conditions, as well as mental health and addiction issues, as Julie said. We saw almost immediately the need for a triage coordinator. When I talk about case finding, I'll talk more about that. We hired our staff for their engagement skills. They're good at building trust and engaging people. We found early on they were not so good at doing case finding. So we shifted gears and hired people who were very good at sifting through daily ED and inpatient reports that come to Care Oregon, and then finding referrals for our staff and getting it out to them. Next slide, please. The next slide shows you just a current snapshot of the number of people we've served since the beginning of the program. The CMI grant required us, as I said, to focus predominantly on the Medicaid population with some duals that we were helping. When the grant ended June 30th of this year, we were able to now ramp up our focus on our dual members, which were in just as much need and had just as many psychosocial barriers as our Medicaid members. Approximately, as you note here, two-thirds of those that we encounter and outreach to, and outreach meaning we see that you're having problems, we see that in our ED, and we know you've been going to the hospital, what can we do to help you? So it's a voluntary program. We invite people, and if they want our help, we join with them and start with them where they're at around addressing what they perceive are the health problems that they're having. Next slide, please. The strategies for finding members. We use multiple case-finding strategies. We use utilization and the criteria that I have on the first slide. We also look at the medical, a deeper dive in talking with the doctor about what's going on medically with this person. So we look at the utilization from claims data and have an eye for, wow, why are they going? This doesn't make sense. They've been to the ED three times for falls. Something's going on there. They were admitted to the hospital for their diabetes out of control or their COPD out of control, and they keep going back in for that. Those are things that alert us, like detective work. Something's wrong here. We then have the health resilience specialist in talking with the doctor say, let me meet with the person. Let me ask them if they want some help. And then we're able to get into a deeper dive and hear about what the client needs and what they see the problem is with taking care of their health. When we go into a clinic, we do a case finding just through the claims data utilization. And then we sit down with a list of names of clients and meet with the doctors in the clinic and talk about what they see as the problem. We work closely with the leadership of the clinic, and that is what really helps give our health resilience specialists the leverage they need and the boundaries around their work to target the highest utilizers and the population the clinic's having the most difficult time getting hold of. We also have the triage coordinators looking at the daily ED reports and giving our staff daily referrals when they see people utilizing or admitted to the hospital, utilizing the ED. That has been much more helpful to our staff, the more real-time referral source for them. And finally, once the clinic is understanding the high-risk population management approach, they start becoming the natural providers in the clinic. They're the ones who see what's happening with their patients. They're curious. And so maybe they aren't at that target criteria, but they see them ramping up, and that's very important for us to see and address before the patients become the high utilizers. We also have one of our supervisors and one of our triage coordinators visiting two shelters where we know homeless members are repeatedly discharged to and from the hospital. And then they cycle back into the hospital because they aren't getting the care they need. So once a week, the supervisor and triage coordinator go and meet at the clinic and actually help people know what health plan they have, what insurance. And if they're part of our Care Oregon membership, we do a warm handoff to the health resilience specialist at the clinic they're assigned to. So we make sure they don't get lost. We don't just give them a piece of paper. There's an outreach effort made to hold someone's hand, per se, and help them get into the clinic. We finally have the POP Intel Registry, which is not so much a referral, although it does act as a referral mechanism for us. The registry was developed during the grant, and we saw it as critical to our track each case, each health resilience specialist tracking their clients by a list. It was also a place to document critical details about the life of the patients, whether it's the ever-changing cell phones, it's where they hang out when they're homeless. They're sort of the psychosocial notes, and more so boxes, because we really wanted to also track our interventions, what we were doing, how many times we were touching people, what we were doing with them, where we were doing it. So this is a holder of information that does not necessarily have the same place in all the different EHRs that our staff use at the different hospital clinic, the different systems of care that they're located in. We also can provide details about what triggers a client, how to approach a client, so that we can remember to share that if we lose track of the client or we need to let someone know. Remember, it's best if you approach Fred and ask him about his aunt who he's taking care of. That will really help cement a personal relationship for you. The other thing is given us metrics with which to provide stakeholders as well as inform our learning around what we're doing with our clients. That's how we know we have a 70% engagement rate. That's how we know we spend about 60% of our time out in the community versus in the clinic. So that has been an incredibly helpful tool for our program. Next slide, please. I've highlighted, as Julie also mentioned, hiring the right staff for this work. Our intervention is really about hiring trauma-informed staff, staff who understand how people behave with trauma histories, because what we see is that so many of this high-risk population are either getting fired from their primary care clinic, are not going or go once, or aren't telling their providers what's really going on with them. So we feel that being able to recognize those symptoms and help both the provider and the client have a safer visit and be supported in sharing information has been a critical tool for us in our engagement rate. This isn't about simply making contact with patients, but helping them establish and build a trust with the primary care provider and that team at their clinic. The other thing is we have time to build a relationship. We do not go in and do an intense intake. It's about doing a lot of listening at first. Our staff are primarily master's level in psychology or social work. And although they're trained as therapists, they do not do therapy with the patients. They use their therapeutic skills to empower and motivate people to change, to build trust, to be able to give feedback and support to the clients who have many, many skill deficits, as we all know. We don't see this as a quick fix. I don't even see it as a fix, per se, of anyone's longstanding history. But what we're doing is starting to do a reset for these clients and helping them develop a safe relationship with their primary care system or their specialist. We find that people, the staff we've hired, have a background in community mental health. They seem to be best equipped. That is my background, and I can appreciate all the work and the clients that we encounter. We're already trained in establishing trusting relationships. We not have knowledge of mental health and addictions treatment as well as symptomatology. We have cross-cultural training. We have a lot of experience in conversations about boundaries with compassion. We also have a lot of knowledge of local ever-changing resources. We provide weekly supervision to the staff because we know, again, as Julie said, The high rate of burnout in this field is well known amongst those of us who have been in it and work in it. And so providing that weekly supervision and support and ideas so that our staff don't get too far down the path of trying to do too much, but more of a high-level systems connectivity and supporting and laying down some future foundation. Again, over and over, the staff talk about how important it is to just listen at first. And we share that information with the providers and the clinics. We also get to see, by spending our time in the community with the clients, what their world actually looks like and how it works. And we can create, we can manage the misperceptions that come up in the primary care clinics around why people aren't showing up, why they aren't cooperating with the treatment, despite the best intentions of the providers. Next slide, please. What is critical is for our staff is actually, as I said, walking alongside the clients. That builds the relationship so much. We go to appointments with clients if they want us to, but most do because they don't understand how the medical system works. We attend specialist appointments. We social service appointments. We help connect people into mental health and addictions treatment. We're teaching communication skills. We're explaining the system to them. We do a lot of translation time around what the provider is saying, what their medical team is saying, and breaking it down so that the staff, so that the clients really understand what it is that they're being told. We know that providers don't have time to spend with people, and so that's where we're an extension for them. And we also know that many providers are really frustrated with these clients, and so don't end up listening to them or necessarily treating them that well because they're very frustrated and they're not sure what else they can provide, which is a really normal thing to have happen. So we found that we have become really a support to the providers in the clinic. When the client is better managing their health, what we notice is they gradually stop contacting us and they're contacting the clinic more often. We introduce them to peer specialists if they would like to continue some support, and in part, we work with such a socially isolated group of people that what we see is they need help connecting to safe communities. Our peer specialists are very valuable in doing that and can follow through a little bit longer than we can. Next slide, please. Actually, the next two slides are some of the early results from 2013 of our program. And I just wanted to give you an idea that we've seen an impact on the clients of the work we're doing, although both show about a 35% reduction in either hospitalizations and ED visits. What we found in our close work with Jeffrey Brenner, who we modeled our team on 4 years ago, is that we can certainly guess there's going to be a 20% regression to the mean. So even if we're breaking even, so to speak, in terms of our costs and able to impact reduction of utilization and increase the attendance to primary care, we feel like we are doing so much to help providers in the community, and that's the feedback we also get, that our support and communication to the primary care clinic about their most difficult population have been incredibly valuable to them. And in fact, a number of comments about providing hope to them about patients they've lost hope in. Next slide. So that's our ED results, which you can feel free to go and look at after my presentation. What I'd say in wrapping up is I think the key elements of our program, we have a foundation of a trauma-informed approach and building trust with people. It's client-centered. We start with where the client wants to start with their health goals. We work in collaboration with clinics. We have access to the EMR, and we have a registry that helps us document those psychosocial issues that are going on and that are critical to engaging this population. The registry is very essential in gathering metrics to show our stakeholders and to improve our learning about the population we're working with. And the other caveat is that we're not working on a billable hour. working on a billable hour, as I think we can all agree, does not allow for us building a trusting relationship. So we are building, we have time to do this and go at the pace of the client instead of expecting the client to go at our pace. Next slide. These are a couple of videos I have on here that can tell you a little bit more about our program, and feel free to contact me or ask questions. So, Bill, I'll pass this on to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lori, and thank you both, Lori and Julie, for such a great presentation and really awesome tips on how you've used outreach and other workforce as well as leveraged your data and electronic health records and building strong community partnerships to find and engage your members.
For more information about this webinar series and other resources, including videos and podcasts, please visit resourcesforintegratedcare.com and follow us on Twitter at integrate_care.